This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's up, Riz Nation? Welcome to the show. We got Candace, we got Isaac, and today we have a very special guest. We have William Harris of the All Rookie Podcast. It is a sports ethos crossover. We love those around here. William, he's been on the show a couple of times, so you might remember him. Will, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. So glad to be joined with you guys talking about the Grizzlies and their draft picks. It's going to be a ton of fun. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. We appreciate you taking the time, man. It's always good to have you on. And I just want to get straight into it. There's a lot of it's probably one of the more debated drafts that I've seen in recent years. So I think we got a lot to talk about. My first question for you is sort of the how do you view this draft? Because that's really the talk. A lot of people view this draft as not being as strong, as being sort of a weaker draft. How do you see this draft overall? What's your thoughts on it?
That's a great question. Yeah, it's been a lot of debate whether it's one of the weakest in recent memory or not. But in my opinion, this draft is very deep. So that's not going to be a question of talent. It's going to be a question of superstar talent or all-star talent. I think that's pretty limited in this draft. But you're going to have 40 to 50 guys that are definitely worth drafting and can play a role in this league. But if you're looking for superstars, it's not deep in that aspect.
Yeah, I think I agree with William 100%. I love the depth of this draft. I think there are guys, if you told me the name guys, especially once you get outside of the lottery, like I was tweeting one night and just trying to name all the guys that I liked outside the lottery, and the next thing I knew I had 20 guys on the list. I mean, there is rotation players all the way down to like in the 50s in this draft, no question. Like William said, I don't think there's franchise changing talent. At the top, I think there are four or five guys that if they reach their ceiling, they could definitely be all-star level players. But I don't think there's no Wimby or Ja Morant, for instance, or guys like that. I don't think even at the top of this draft, and when you talk about guys like Alexander Sarr, I think the sky's the limit for him, but I still don't, even at his ceiling, I don't know if he's a franchise type guy. He might be that second tier guy to like that 1-1B or B type player to a 1-1A on a team. But this draft, I mean, I like it a lot. And there's been talk that a lot of teams don't like this draft, but the rumors are that the Memphis Grizzlies do like this draft, and they're planning on being extremely active and maybe trying to get multiple picks in the first round. So I'm expecting a interesting night for Grizz Nation here with this 2024 draft. I expect them to be extremely active. I think with the way kind of things played out last year with the Ja Morant situation, the injuries, and you kind of look around the landscape of the West, I think they know that they have to make a move now. I mean, with the contract situation, the years they got coming up, they have a small window here to kind of really push it. And I think Zach Kleiman and his front office knows that. And I think they're going to be aggressive.
That's a really interesting point, especially as your point about like how the draft is deep after the lottery. And it seems like, at least my view, it seems like it's a pretty tough year to be in the lottery of all the years, because I don't think the value is there like it normally is, even just from a trade value perspective. Is that something you would agree with, disagree with, Will? Like, where's your stance on it? If you're a trade, picking at number 9, were you better off just being at 20?
Well, trade value, that's a great point. Yeah, I think the trade value is very low. But yeah, like if you categorize this draft in tiers, like it's probably the 1 through 4 are the potential star tier. And then 5 through 14, you know, are pretty similar spots. And then 15 to 30, pretty similar spots. So it just depends on where you are. But a team like the Grizzlies that are in the 9th selection, but you're not a bad team. You know, you just had a series of unfortunate events, of course, happen to you guys. I think 9 is a really good spot for you because you're going to get a player that should be able to come in and crack your rotation at minimum, you know, help you off the bench, but it's going to be a good player. It's not going to necessarily be a shot in the dark if you stay at nine. So you're in a good spot, but you know, if I'm a bad team, you know, the Hawks are another position. They're a good roster team, but the bad teams are not really going to be able to improve this year from this draft, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, you look at a team like the Pistons, man, that dropped all the way down to the five, man. You kind of feel sorry for them. It's already a draft that doesn't have that franchise-changing talent, and that's what they really need, man. They dropped all the way down to five, man. That's just a rough lottery for those guys. But I think you hit it nail on the head. I think for the Grizzlies, I know a lot of fans were disappointed they dropped down to nine when they started off in the seventh spot in the lottery and dropped down to nine. People were a little bit upset, but I think it's house money because I think in reality, everyone knows that this Grizzlies team wouldn't be in this position under normal circumstances. So to get a player to be able to have that asset, whether they draft someone there or move up in the draft, there's been some rumors that they might go up to try to get a guy like Donovan Clingan, who I'm a big fan of, or they might try to drop down. There's a lot of guys they like. Devin Carter, of course, his dad is an assistant coach on the team. So there's a lot of different ways. There's also talk that they could move out. Jared Allen is a guy that's apparently on the market that they could possibly look to move to try to make a move to get. John Collins is another name that's come up around here a lot lately. So, I mean, there's a lot of different ways the Grizz could go in this with this pick. So that's why I'm excited, man. I'm interested in which direction they go. But again, man, people talk so bad about this draft, but again, I like this draft. I mean, even at the top, man, there's a lot of guys that I really like. Again, it's just if you're looking for your Wimbys or guys like that, it's not going to be that. But there's some really good players in this draft, like William said.
Well, you said something that I want to sort of elaborate on a little bit. You mentioned that in theory, the Grizzlies should be able to draft somebody that should be able to crack their rotation. For me, I think that because there's such a log jam at guard, at the wing spot now with the emergence of G.G. Jackson and Vince Williams, I think that's sort of a really crowded space now. Outside of center, I'm actually not so sure that's the case. Now, center is a real need for this team. As they traded away Steven Adams as well as Xavier Tillman at the trade deadline. But for me, I'm kind of in a rock and hard place because generally speaking, I say best player available. But when you add in the context and the nuance of the Grizzlies just being so stacked at those positions, I'm not really sure that is a player that could crack the rotation. I'm not sure how familiar you are with the context of the Grizzlies' needs, and I know a lot of people didn't pay attention to the Grizzlies this year. Not mad at that, but do you have any thoughts on like that with that context of the Grizzlies' team?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting which direction you go. You mentioned Vince Williams. He played tremendous last year, but that was unexpected for you guys. So is he going to remain in that lineup? Like, you know, he might have been undrafted, I believe. So if you draft a guy at nine.
No, he went in second round.
Second round.
In the 40s.
Yeah, so is he going to start over a guy you take at nine? You know, that he could. His talent showed last year that he could, but was that just because it was on a bad roster? Obviously, GG could be elevating up to the starting role. Brandon Clark could be starting. You have a lot of depth in a lot of places, but, you know, backup point guard is kind of shallow because Marcus Smart is probably going to play the dual role, point guard and shooting guard. So when y'all lost Jones to Washington, that seemed like that hurt you guys a lot. So you got a number of ways to go, but it will be interesting to see which direction you go because I don't know if Vince Williams is going to start. Did Jaren Jackson, I've heard stories, he doesn't like playing the five. If you did draft a center, you can align him up with Jaren Jackson and then Vince Williams will be coming off the bench. Y'all tell me, you know, y'all are the
Grizzlies.
I was going to say, yeah, there's a lot of different thoughts about how this could go, and you touched on some of those things. Like, there's been a lot of talk of, which I'm not a fan of at all, but I think as long as Marcus Smart is on this roster, I think he's going to start, and I don't like that. With you already have a smaller point guard in Ja Morant. You have a shooting guard in Desmond Bane that doesn't have a great wingspan, and you got to start Marcus Smart alongside those guys. That's really small. But with him being that vet and him with that playoff experience, as long as he's on that roster, they're going to start him. That's kind of one reason why, I mean, he's polarizing among his fan base. There's a lot of fans that would like to trade him. The reason why I would, if I had an opportunity to move him for something that fit this roster better, I would, because I just think it would save them from themselves, because I think he's going to be in that starting lineup, and I don't think that needs to be the case. I think either GG or Vince Williams needs to start. It makes and bring Marcus Smart off the bench as that super six man. It opens up things a lot more for the rotation. If you start him, it makes everything clunky, because then at that point, you got to try to find a way to get GG and Vince minutes off the bench. That means you're going to have to play some GG some at the four, which I'm not a fan of. It just messes everything up. And also with the center thing, I think if you listen to GM Zach Kleiman, I think he's a fan of Jaren at the five. But also at that end of season press conference, Jaren, he's kind of said time and time again that that's not what he wants to do. He's not a rebounder. He's kind of said he doesn't want to rebound. Brandon Clark also came out and said that he feels like he's better off, that himself is better off the bench, and it's better to start a big bruising center next to Jaren. So there's a lot of thoughts. I think Jaren could still be your five opening night, and they could either go for a power forward and maybe bring a backup center off. If they draft a center, he could be a backup like a Klinken. A lot of people like Zach Edey. I'm not a fan of his, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. But there's just a lot of different ways you can view this. So I just think there's some guys that depend on, once you get to nine, depending on value. For me, I'm usually a best player available guy, but kind of what Candace said, kind of the situation, this team is not your normal lottery team, so they're kind of guys that are locked in different positions. But certain guys, if they fall to nine, I think the value is so good at that point, like that just goes out the window. You take them anyway. You just go with the talent, and you just got to figure that out. But that's kind of where I am on that.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code POD to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code POD at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code POD.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Yeah, well, I'm team get a center. I'm really just team get a center, man. I do know if there are other talents at that position, but I just see so, like, I'm not a big fan of, they've already made the mistake, I think, of tripling down on youth in the past. That's sort of been a conversation with Zaire Williams and Jake LaRavia and David Roddy, and how that sort of really backfired. And I think that this team really needs experience more than anything else, but the trade value is low. So that's why I feel sort of, I'm more down on this draft, maybe more so just because of the trade value. I'm team get some experience in here, and I don't know how much experience that pick is going to warrant them. But if they do draft somebody, man, I feel like it's got to be a center, just because I don't see how whoever they draft at nine wouldn't just be getting minutes at South Haven playing for the Memphis Hustle, man. I just don't see how they're, you know, or just sitting at the end of the bench, not doing anything. More than likely with this team, they probably be getting minutes down with the Hustle, because that's how this team sort of develops their talent. And I'm just not sure that that's worth the number nine pick, even if it is, you know, good value. So that's sort of where I stand. It's sort of hard for me to really buy in on this draft, man, because I really just think this team, if you're trying to make a playoff push, you're trying to do it in a short amount of time, which the Grizzlies are, given their contract situations coming up with Jaren. I think that what I know they need to do is get experience, but I don't know if that's an option. And I worry that ultimately it could set this team back.
Well, they got to address center anyway. Even if they go a different direction at nine, they're going to have to either trade for a veteran center. So I'm not saying draft a different position at nine and then just ignore center, because that's something they got to do. They can't go into the season. They have to do something to address the front court. I mean, that's a given. So even if they draft somebody else, another position at nine, I still think they're going to do that, because they're in a position where they have to, whether that's they have the ammo to kind of move back up into the first round. They have that 39 pick, 57. They have all their picks going forward. So there's some guys that are like in the 20s in that area that I think could help, especially at power forward, depending on what they decide to do. If they draft a center or bring another center in and they're still going to start Jaren, they could draft a power forward to kind of back up BC if he starts, or maybe even bring in a free agent power forward that kind of can start next to Jaren and bring BC off the bench. So there's just a lot of questions to be answered. So, I mean, it just depends on how these dominoes fall, which is kind of what I'm looking at. But let's start looking at some of the prospects. And I guess you know where to start.
Let me mention this real quick. Just off of what Candace said, you know, it's kind of funny that she said that, you know, you mentioned you want a center, you want some experience, and you have that ninth pick. You had that and Steven Adams. Why did you guys trade Steven Adams? And y'all didn't even really get nothing major back for him. Is it just because you think he's done with that injury, or was that a mistake?
That's a great question. It really is, because I think it's going to tell itself. Now, my assumption is that the Grizzlies think that he's done, or that it's a chronic issue.
Yeah,
will be ongoing. Even if he does come back and plays well, that he's going to continue to have injury issues, and that they can't count on him. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, that had been their logic, because it does create a huge hole in the roster. And that's another reason why I'm a little frustrated, because I understood the move in terms of salary, and that was salary and rosters. They needed the money. They also needed the space. But I just feel like their options to fill that hole may involve them trading, a talent like a Luke Kennard or Marcus Smart, whereas you wouldn't have had to do that if you didn't trade Adams. Now, there was a lot of suspicious things going on with his injury, though. Like, that whole Steven Adams situation was really weird.
Yeah.
Him and the medical staff. Ultimately, he was initially misdiagnosed. I think that's been confirmed. He was misdiagnosed initially, and they ended up trading, firing the entire, like, medical company. It's just the company that used to back them, that had been with them for years, really, in my opinion, I believe, since the franchise started. So there was a whole thing around that. It was rumors that Steven Adams wanted to play in the playoffs. He felt like he could play. The team wouldn't allow him to play. He was seemed to be frustrated with that. He wasn't around the team all the following year. I mean, most of every guy, injured or otherwise, was on the bench. Steven Adams the only time he came to a game was right before.
In Chicago.
The Chicago game, right before he was about to be traded. He never came to Memphis, actually. There was a lot of disagreement. I think there were rumors that he wanted to do a holistic method of healing. Yeah. He wanted him to have surgery. So there's a lot of back and forth. Ultimately, he didn't get the surgery initially. And then, according to the team, the issue wasn't fixed. I don't know if he disagreed with that notion or not. It's really weird, though. Like, that whole situation is weird. And in my opinion, if he comes out and he plays well and he's able to stay on the floor, man, the Grizzlies messed that situation all the way up, in my opinion.
And I think, I was going to say real quick, it's everything that she said. I also think if you listen to Zach Lyman, and every time he has a mic in front of his face, I think he also wants to change the offense. I think he wanted to move away from kind of having that bruising start and center. I think he views five out is kind of a way that he wants to play. I mean, because he even said, most of the people in the fan base disagree. I think Jaren disagrees. I think the other players disagrees. But he says that he feels like they're probably at their best with Jaren at the five. I think it's always been his vision to have Jaren play in the five in a five out type of scenario. And Steven Adams just doesn't fit there. And I think with all the injury stuff and everything going on for that, I think that expedited that process. And he looked at it and said, okay, man, this is not really how I want to play anyway. This guy's banged up. He's probably going to be chronically banged up. We're just going to move in a different direction and kind of address this situation later. And I think that's kind of where they are right now. So even if they draft a bigger center like a Klingon, I don't think they view that player as a starter. I think if they draft Klingon, he would be a backup with Jaren starting at the five and also closing at the five. And again, I think at that point, if they did draft a guy like that, I think they're going to be looking at bringing in a veteran power forward to either start next to Jaren or back up BC. I think that's kind of where they are. So we'll see. If he comes out playing well in Houston, man, I think with everything that he did for us with the offensive rebound and creating second opportunities, the screen setting, the passing, if he still looks like that same guy, man, I think they probably did make a mistake and move on too early. I know a lot of fans say, well, he got played off the floor in the playoffs and stuff like that. But, I mean, he was a tremendous, tremendous talent for this team. I have a sneaky feeling that it is going to be a chronic situation. He might play some, but I got a feeling he's going to be a guy that's in and out. Once at his age, he's getting a little bit older. At that size, you have a knee issue. That's never a good thing. So we'll see. But I got a feeling that their diagnosis on kind of what they feel like he's going to be going forward is probably correct.
Yeah, I just had to know the answer to that question, you know, because it was intriguing to me how y'all got rid of him. But I didn't mean to throw you off, Isaac. Go ahead.
Oh, no, man. Yeah, man. I was going to say, man, let's start discussing some of these prospects. And I guess starting at the top of the draft, man, big man Alexander Saar, 7'1", actually put on a little bit of weight. He was listed at about 210, 215, weighed out at 224. At the combine, 7'4" wingspan. There's still not a consensus on him going number one. There's some, I mean, probably about half and half, actually, of mocks that still have Zachary Richichet going number one to Atlanta. If I'm them, I'm definitely taking Alexander Saar. I think you're making a mistake. Richichet is the prospect that 6 to 7 months ago I loved. He was my number one on my board 6 to 7 months ago, but he's just falling off the map for me. I don't even have him probably in my top 12 right now. And some of the things that have come out about him lately is that short arms, the measurements didn't come out well. He's really struggled. I mean, he had a couple months there where he couldn't even throw it in the ocean. And the three-point shooting is kind of one of his biggest aspects. He wasn't shooting the ball well at all. So I'm just really shocked why all of a sudden now he's kind of jumped back up in that top two when he had kind of fallen back a little bit. But with Saar, I'm a fan of Saar's. I think he's raw. He hadn't been playing basketball that long. A lot of people are a lot more sold on what he's going to do year one. I think defensively, he's going to be a lot more help year one than he is offensively. I think his offensive game is still evolving and it's going to take a while. I'm not huge on him having a big impact year one. A lot of people think he's going to come in and be that guy year one. I think ceiling-wise, when you look at the guys in this draft, he's as high as anybody's, but I'm not sure if that's going to translate year one. And kind of look at Atlanta, if they do take him, they have some guys in Clint Capella and Okonwu, and you kind of look at how that fits. I think Capella's gone for sure. Okonwu might be a guy they hang on to. I'm a big fan of his as well. But kind of what are your thoughts on Saar and his possible fit in Atlanta?
I agree with everything you said. I mean, you took the words right out of my mouth. But, yeah, I think in a way, I never thought of it as he was raw, but I get your point because I do think, like you said, first year is not going to come over and dominate like Paolo Banchero. I think each year he will get better. So you're spot on with that. But yeah, he's 19 years old, 7 foot one, 224 pounds. Like you said, very bouncy, powerful. We've seen Evan Mobley. He's had his ups and downs. Saar could be in that same type of position. But yeah, if you draft Alex Saar, you definitely need to trade Clint Capella, in my opinion.
Otherwise, for sure.
You got a log jam there and it's not helping you at all with those three big guys there. So, but his future is very bright. It's weird to me. Yeah. Like you mentioned about Richichet, that doesn't fit well for the Hawks. It's not going to help the Hawks at all. If you're going to do that, you might as well trade the pick in my opinion. So the Hawks have a interesting plan. They're going to have to make with DeJounte and Trae Young as well. So they're going to have to be huge on the trade market. Otherwise this team is going to look like an incomplete puzzle.
yeah, it's weird for them to jump up to number one because that's a weird spot for them. Because even with Sarr, I think he's going to be a really good player in this league. But just looking at their roster and where they are and what they need, that just, I don't know. Even if I was a Hawk fan, I would be glad to have the number one pick, but I wouldn't be jumping for joy thinking, okay, man, this is it. We're really about to make our move here. Like, it's kind of a weird fit. Like, even if they take Sarr, I don't know what that really does for them because they're in a weird spot. They got veteran guys, guys that are on high salaries. Like, they just have some decisions to make, and I don't know if Sarr really clears anything up for them. I think both of those guys won't be back. Like, I don't think Trae Young and Deontay Murray will both be an Atlanta Hawk next season. I think at least one of those guys are going to be moved. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But if I'm them, I'm definitely going Sarr or Richeshay, man. It just surprises me how many mocks have him going number two. Candace, you have anything to add to that?
No. I pretty much piggyback on what you guys think, especially in regards to the Hawks fit. Yeah, I completely agree.
And like you said, you got Richeshay not in the top 12. He's my ninth ranked player. So, yeah, I don't get it either why he's in this top two, top one or two conversation at all. But I don't know. I can't explain it either.
Man, I do have a bone to pick with you, though, man. This is a heavy point guard draft. Like, if you looking for point guard, man, this is a really good draft, man. I was looking over on YouTube, man. I saw your personal mock draft, man. You were big on Isaiah Collier. Like, I like Isaiah Collier, but, man, he's, like, up there for you. Like, that's your top player outside of Sarr, man. Explain yourself on that.
Well, not even outside of Sarr. He's my number one player in this draft.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at his tape, he's just a dynamic point guard. And as you see the playoffs this year, dynamic play point guards are taking over. You know, you need one to go far in the NBA, especially this time and age. And if you look at this tape, super fast point guard, lightning fast, actually. He has the wow factor, great size. He's an electric player. When I watch film on this draft class, it's not many dynamic players. He was one of them. Tyler Smith is one of them.
I love Tyler Smith. Yeah, one of my favorite prospects.
That all-star potential I see in Isaiah Collier. And if, you know, when I looked at his tape, I was like, he reminds me of somebody. I had to go back and look at the tape at John Wall in Kentucky, and it's very similar. So he gets.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see a little John Wall in him.
Yeah, he gets with the right team, right coach. That upside is higher than anyone else in this class, in my opinion.
Man, that's not great. I like him, but I don't know about all that, man. If you know, we're talking about Isaiah Collier, point guard out of USC. Great size, though, man, and shoes. He's probably about 6'5", 205. Like you said, man, dynamic. Not the greatest shooter. I think that's one thing. Not a great free throw shooter either. I think that's one of the things. But when I look at the point guards in this draft, I don't know if I have him at the top, man. I think Castle is a guy that I really like. Now, his offensive game, again, you talk about guys that can't shoot. Shot it well at the combine, but at UConn, man, was not a great shooter. I think that's the big question with him. But the thing about him, man, his size, he's about 6'7", and shoes 210. And one thing about him, man, and I think he did himself a disservice. I don't know why he decided, him and his agent, I think he got bad advice to not work out with teams with established starting point guards, because at 6'7", 210, I mean, I was looking at guys, he's technically bigger than Desmond Bane, bigger than Vince Williams Jr. I mean, that guy, he can play next to a point guard. You could play him at two or three in super small lineups. I don't know why he would paint himself in a box. Now, I got a feeling it's not going to matter, because I was saying it could hurt his draft stock, but I think San Antonio is going to take him at four. That's who I have them taking. I think he's going to be him or Rob Dillingham. I think they go point guard. It would have been Topic, but I think with kind of his injury, I think he's going to be the faller in this lottery. I think with his injury, and then he measured his arms, measured shorter than a lot of people thought. They thought he had this big plus wingspan, and he did not at all the other day when they measured him. So I think Topic is going to drop a little bit. But Castle is the guy that I really like, man. I think if his offensive game evolves, I think you could look up two or three years down the line, I think he could be the best player out of this draft easily. Because, I mean, defensively, I think he's going to be elite, especially with that size. I just kind of hated that he painted himself into that box, because you're looking at a mock draft here. Now, I don't think he makes it anywhere near here. Tankathon has the Grizzlies taking him at 9. And though I'm not a fan of them taking another – guard, but a guy that size at 6'7", when you have a smaller point guard, you have a shooting guard at Bane that doesn't have a plus wingspan, having a guy at 6'7", I think he's a guy that could fit in there, especially if you're possibly moving on from Marcus Smart, because I think if they make a trade this offseason, contract-wise, the guys you look at are Luka Nard and Marcus Smart. Those are the movable contracts they make. So if they do anything semi-significant, I think those are going to be the guys on the table. But I'm a big fan of Stephen Castle. You look at some of the other point guards, Rob Dillingham. I think the question with him is, he's smaller. Will he be able to defend? I think we know he'll be able to get buckets. I don't think there's any question on that. Jarrett McCain out of Duke is another guy that's kind of a combo guard. Devin Carter, again, that I mentioned earlier, who's Anthony Carter, his father's assistant coach with the Grizzlies out of Providence. He's a dynamic prospect, man, measured really well athletically at the combine. I think he might have had the highest vertical, which I didn't know he was getting. I know he had hops, but I didn't know he was getting up like that. Averaged about 20 points, man, 9 rebounds that you really love. So those are some guys, man. I think I would have all those guys over Collier, man. But you like Collier, huh?
I really do. Like I said, I mean, the way in this day and time with the analytics and everything, there's a lot of players in the past that would be looked at as negative because of the shooting. You know, Isaiah Collier did shoot 34% from three.
He's a capable 3-point shooter. Not terrible. Yeah.
And the way these shooting coaches are in the NBA, they're getting players to percentages up ridiculously amount. So I'm not worried about his shooting at all. You know, some other factors, he may dribble a little too much. He doesn't get enough assists. That could be coached up. So it's nothing I'm worried about in that respect. Referring to Stephon Castle, for me, when I watch his tape, he's just a shooting guard. You know, we saw him play shooting guard at UConn all year. I didn't see him play point guard. So we're going by his word of mouth. I can play point guard. His high school tape, I'm a point guard. I can't scout all of that. You know what I mean?
It's weird. It's weird that he is, like I said, he's exclusively saying he's a point guard.
Yeah.
Which is weird to me. Like, that part I don't get.
Yeah, and like, since we haven't seen it in college, you definitely should be working out for teams showing them that you want to play that position, that you can do it.
Yeah.
But from what I evaluated, my first sentence that I had on him is, he's a very natural shooting guard. You know, that's what I got from that. So for me, he was my 16th ranked player. And so now everybody's changing the aspect that he's a point guard. If he's going to be a great point guard, that's great. But I mean, I can't base it off what I didn't see. You know what I mean?
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code POD to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code POD at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code POD.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
These days, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make all kinds of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs in towns and cities across the country. And jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. Like I said, I'm a big fan of his. I think if his jump shot comes around, man, he could be tremendous. Because I think defensively, I think he could be elite. That's what I look at when I see Stephen Castle, and I just like the size with him being 6'7". But another prospect, Reed Sheppard, man. What are your thoughts on Reed Sheppard? Like, a lot of mocks have him going top three, and I've never really understood that. Like, I mean, he did some good things at Duke. He could shoot the basketball, but one thing that really turned me off from him, and I wasn't a big fan of his anyway, was that game in the NCAA tournament against Oakland. He really folded on the big stage. Like, Gokey, the kid that was really shooting the basketball well in that game, just going nuts in that game. He didn't want any parts of that guy in that game. I mean, he was, I saw it in his eyes. He was scared to death in that moment, man. I was like, man, that just doesn't bode well for me. Like, I don't see it with him. A lot of people love him. Like, a lot of people, I've seen people, man, that's the top of their board. There's people for the Grizzlies. And I'm looking at it like, man, there's no way that I would take that guy in the top three. He screams role player to me, like, just a guy, because he wasn't super high usage at Kentucky either. He came out the bench. I don't know, man. What are your thoughts on Sheppard?
I agree with you. I'm not high on him at all. He's my 24th ranked prospect. You heard me right, 24th. So, you know, I do all my scouting before I listen to other pods and see all the mock drafts and everything. And just like Stephon Castle, Reed Sheppard played shooting guard at Kentucky. Dillingham was the point guard. So he's 6'1 without shoes. So 6'2 with shoes.
That's what I'm saying. He became even smaller than everybody thought. Yeah. That's even worse.
You got a 6'2 shooting guard. When has that ever worked? Yeah. When has that ever worked in the NBA? And so you're going to tell me he's a point guard? I haven't seen that. He has no dynamic athleticism other than the jumping ability that shows me he's just going to translate to point guard as well. So I think people may be thinking they're going to get a Steph Curry here. If he played point guard and had that tremendous three-point shooting, and I saw that on the tape, maybe. But for me, he's the best three-point shooter in this draft class by far. He's got talent.
Shot 52%. So that is
that's unheard of. I don't remember seeing a talent that had over 50%.
Not at that volume, the amount he shot. Definitely not.
But he has all the fundamentals. Perfect college point guard. Well, shooting guard. But to me, when I looked at his film, he looks like Corey Kispert, but 5 inches smaller.
Yeah,
that's not a top pick to me.
Yeah, I agree with you. I just don't see it. I think. And there's a lot of talk that Houston might take him at three, man. I just don't know, man. I don't see it. I just see a guy that's going to come off the bench. He'll be an okay player. He'll be a rotation player. I just don't think he has any feeling to be anything more than that. Like, he's not dynamic at all. He's not a big-time athlete. He came in smaller. I think he's an undersized, like you said. He's more of a two guard, I think, than a point guard. So that makes him really undersized. Like, I don't know. I just don't. A lot of people love him, man, but I guess they just look at the shooting. But if I'm going to take a guy top three, I need there to be a little bit more room to grow than what I feel like he has. But again, we're talking with William Harris from the All Rookie Podcast, also here on the Ethos Grizzlies Network. A big debate.
Let me mention something to you, okay?
Okay, go ahead.
Didn't y'all draft Kennedy Chandler like 2 years ago, that point guard?
From Tennessee.
Yeah, he was really good, but he was really small, and he didn't get a chance. So, like,
he's not even in the league anymore.
These smaller guards, you gotta be excellent to make it in the league. So it doesn't bode well for you if you're not a natural point guard. You don't have, you know, athleticism. Just being short is tough. So I don't see how Reed Sheppard's gonna make it, but I wish him the best. I hope he proves me wrong, but. Now, go ahead to your point.
I was gonna say, if you were down in 25 or something, I could see it, but not top three, man. Like, I don't get it. But a lot of people said, I've talked to a lot of people here, a lot of people here around the Grizz draft guys, they're in love with them, but I don't see it. But again, one of the big debates, man, around here has been Donovan Clingan versus Zach Edey. It's been hot topic, super polarizing. I think with both of those guys, you love them or you hate them. There doesn't seem to really be any in between from what you see on them. I'm a big Donovan Clingan guy. Between the two prospects, I just feel like I know people look at Zach Edey, they look at the size, it's 7'4", about 7'5". If you look at his measurements, or what he be in shoes for, what he measured at the combine, they see these big numbers that he put up at Purdue and the big rebounding numbers and the historical numbers, not to say, but I'm not sure that it translates. I think you look at his usage rate at Purdue, I don't think there's going to be any team in the league that drafts him and they're just going to put him in a post and throw the ball down to him 30 times a game. And that's what he's used to doing. And I also don't know if people talk about all the stuff that he does, but in order for you to do those things, you got to be able to stay on the floor. And that's the big question that I have with him. If in order for him to do the things that he does well, I think he needs to be, he has to be on the floor a lot. I don't know. I think he's going to get killed in the pick and roll. I think he's going to be a specialized player. And there are people that think he's going to be starting, playing 30 minutes a night, and I just have a hard time seeing that, man. What are your thoughts on Zach Edey?
I love how you said specialized player, because I do think that is the floor for him. You know, coming in at 7'4", 300 pounds, you don't have to worry about the paint, really. As long as he doesn't get blown by, even if he gets blown by, you know, that wingspan is going to be ridiculous. But, yeah, being 7'4", not really being able to move your feet tremendously, he could be a specialized player like a Boban, maybe a few more minutes than Boban, but his ceiling is really high. Also, on the other end, you know, if it works, it can be pretty amazing for a team. If it doesn't work, you know, it's not that big of a loss because, like I said, he can play 10 to 15 minutes per night. So for me, he's my 18th ranked prospect. This is Zach Edey I'm talking about. Much improved from last year. Last year, I thought he needed to stay in school because I had him possibly undrafted. So he came back and definitely improved his game a ton. It's just a matter of how is his game going to translate in the NBA, because the rebounding and the rim protection they should be guaranteed to be there. Now, when you talk about Donovan Clingan, you're not going to like me on this list. Donovan Clingan.
Oh, man. Man.
See, I got him. He's my 22nd ranked player.
Oh, man.
I know it, Isaac. But no, 7'2", he played at 265. He weighed at the combine at 282. That's really heavy for him. You know.
Yeah, I was surprised at that. It didn't look like he had put on that much weight, but I thought he came in 282. I was shocked by that.
Yeah, and looking at his tape, I had to go back and look at Ivica Zubac when he was younger. And that tape is pretty similar. And Ivica Zubac went 32nd in the draft class, you know, and Clingan weighs 40 more pounds than Ivica Zubac. So I don't think I could see him having a Ivica Zubac type of role in the NBA, but that's bottom, 20 to 30 center. He could be a starting center, but he's not going to be a top 20 center in the league. Is that worth a lottery pick? It depends on your need, I guess. But to me, I think he benefited a lot being on that UConn team. That
man.
I think he's a system player.
Hey, you know my guy, man.
It was tough for him to score in the paint at times, and being so much bigger than everybody else, it shouldn't have been that tough. So I know you want him in Memphis. I think he will be okay in Memphis, you know, because he is not going to have to carry the load. He's going to have Jaren Jackson there. But to me, I don't understand the top five talk. But 9 is probably the earliest he should go, but I have him 22nd. I think I have him mock 21st to the Pelicans, but I don't know.
Man, see, I think he could be elite defensively as a shot blocker. I think, man, you add him next to Jaren Jackson Jr., man, it's going to be extremely tough to score in the paint if you have those two guys on the floor. And his passing ability, man, I think if you kind of look at Steven Adams, and I know I've kind of said that they were trying to go away from that, but I guess if they draft him, I guess maybe that's not what they're trying to do. But I think everything that Steven Adams could do, I think that he can do just as well. I mean, if you watch his playmaking ability, there are not many big guys outside of guys like Jokic or somebody like that that I've really seen that can make some of the passes that he makes. I mean, you just go back and look at his playmaking tape. I mean, I think outside of anything, even more than the defense, I think that's what impressed me the most. And I'm also a proponent. I feel like the opposite of kind of what you said, I feel like they kind of held him back offensively at UConn. I think there's a lot more to his game. I think he's a guy that could possibly at some point shoot threes. Like I believe that there's a lot more in his offensive bag than they showed at UConn. Like I think his offensive game can expand, and I believe that more so than I believe in Edie. Like I know Edie shot threes. They both knocked down threes at the combine. Edie actually shot better. But the Edie thing to me feels more like you watching all these guys, you watch them in pregame warm-ups, they're all knocking down threes. I don't think Edie's game is ever going to stretch out to anything more than outside of the basket. And I just kind of feel – I don't feel that's the case with Donovan Clingan. I feel like there's more offense in there than he showed. I mean, I know his free throw percentage was at 58%. And the thing about that is it's weird for him because his form isn't broken at all. And, like, if you go back and look at his splits, you'll have games where he's, like, 4-4, 5-7, 9-11. And then he'll have games where he's 2-8. Like, he'll go – you'll watch him in games, and he'll hit 6-7 in a row, and then he might miss 5 in a row. And most of the time when people are bad free throw shooters, they're consistently bad, and that's not what you see with him. He also doesn't clank a lot of them. They're not these bad misses that you use, like Steven Adams is a terrible free throw shooter. He's hitting side of the rim, hit the backboard. That's not what you get with Donovan Clingan. They just rim in and out when he misses them. They're close. I think if he gets into an NBA system with shooting coach, I think that his free throw shooting can improve. I believe you can get that up to high 60s, 70%. I also think he has three-point shooting potential. When you watch him, he took a few this year, and it looks smooth. I mean, and they talk about in practice all the time that he's a three-point shooter. And he'll have that top of the key look, and he'll look, and then he'll pass it up a lot of the times. I believe that he can make that shot. I've seen him working out with movement, with guys playing defense on him, with sticks, raising sticks up, and he's knocking them down consistently. I just believe on the move while he's making them too. I just believe that he's a guy that his offensive game can expand. And if his offensive game expands, that's what makes me believe in him a lot more than Edie, that his game will translate. I don't have as much worry about him fitting because he doesn't need the basketball like that. He wasn't a guy they just threw the basketball in to score like Edie, and that's what Edie is used to. How is he going to transition that to the league? I think that's the question. I just have more questions about Edie. I think Edie's bust potential is higher than Donovan Clingan's. That's a lot of people disagree. Like there's people that agree with me, and there's people that disagree. So we'll see. But that's if Edie does pay it out, man, they're going to be on me, man, because I've been strong with my dislike for Edie and whether he'll translate. It's going to be question, man. They're going to be on my head for sure.
I definitely agree with the bust factor being higher for Edie. I definitely agree with what you're saying. I think Clingan is far better shooter than Edie, and he will be able to translate to shooting threes from the outside as well. So I'm with you on that part. It's just a matter of, you know, he needs to go to a good team. You know, like if he was to go to the Wizards, it could be ugly. You know what I mean? But if he goes to the Grizzlies, he should be successful. And I think for Edie, for me, I think the success of Chet, Wembanyama, these taller centers that are not normally this tall playing this well in the NBA, I think that helps me think Zach Edie could possibly flourish. But yeah, it's still a possibility. That's why I had these guys 18 and 22. You know, they're just not a guarantee for me. But it could work. It could work. I want to hear Candace's opinion because she's the one that's lacking for her center for the Grizzlies. So which one would you prefer out of these two?
From everything that I understand, and I pretend that by no means to be a draft expert. That's really not my expertise. I'm all Grizz, but draft is not as much my thing for sure. But I do lean Donovan Clingan. If nothing else, it's simply off of the bus factor being so big for Edie and this being such an important pick for the Grizzlies where they just can't afford to really miss, especially that bad if it ends up being bad. I do tend to think that slower guys who struggle to move their feet, the Chets, the Wimbys, those guys are just a little bit more mobile, a little bit more agile, or not maybe even little, but more agile, more mobile than an Edie. And I also think that I tend to lean with Isaac that offensive game will translate a little bit more. So if nothing else, I'm team higher floor. And for that reason, I lean in the direction of Donovan Clingan. I'm not passionate one way or the other because really – like I said, I think they need experience. I think they need to get a free agent or something anyway. But yeah, if I'm making the pick, I'm going Donovan Clingan. But I wanted to ask you, Will, because you're everybody we mentioned that's at the top of the lottery, you got them way down on your list, man. They might as well just be in the second round. So I'm curious to know who is at the top, and you're gonna have to defend your stance, obviously, because if you got all the lottery people at the bottom, then you must have second round picks at the top. So defend your stance. But I'm just curious, like your first, you know, few prospects or people, maybe the things you think controversial. I mean, you can't go through the whole thing. We don't have that much time. But I'm curious to know, like, man, who do you like the most?
Well, for me, watching film this year, it just seemed like the consensus. Another part of why the reason the people are saying this draft class is so weak, the consensus seems to have a lot of safe and role player type of players in their top 14 picks. So for me, I went for, you know, dynamic, you know, players that could be stars in this league as opposed to safe players. So like my first few guys, Isaiah Collier, number one, Alex Saar, number two. Cody Williams. I know Isaac has been hating on Cody Williams.
I'm not a Cody Williams fan.
He's my number three ranked player. Then Matias Buzelis is four. Ron Holland, five. Tyler Smith, six. Rob Dillingham, seven. Khalil Ware, eight. I had Khalil Ware being mocked to you guys in my first mock.
Yeah, I'm a big Khalil Ware fan.
I think that would be a nice fit. Then Richard Shea at nine and Terrence Shannon at 10. So that's my top 10.
Ready to pop the question and take advantage of 30% off? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com to get 30% off select lab-grown diamonds. That's BlueNile.com for 30% off lab-grown diamonds. BlueNile.com.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Yeah, that definitely goes against the consensus. There's no question. But I think with this draft, man, it's just all over the place. I mean, people have their opinions. Like I said, I mean, I think a reason for that is there's just not a lot of difference between these prospects. I mean, none of these guys are going to be franchise-changing players. I think this is a draft of maybe a few guys that maybe eventually end up all-stars and a lot of role players. I think that's what you got. And when you're talking about role players, I mean, it comes down to opinion, comes down to fit, where they land, what you think of a different, what you value in a player, and that can vary greatly. And I think that's what you see, because mock drafts are even all over the place. I mean, you don't even have a consensus at number one. So I think that tells you what people feel about this draft. Like, because usually you have a consensus, but a lot of times at one, two, and three, and four, you have a consensus of kind of how that's going to go. And there is no consensus. I mean, there's not consensus at number one. And even with three or four, you could throw a group of about five or six guys that could possibly go in there between two, three, and four in this draft. So it's an interesting draft. I think there's a lot of talent, but I mean, it just goes by a matter of opinion. And I think there's probably going to be a lot of surprises in this draft. Like a lot of teams, especially once you get down into like 8, 9, 10, there might be some guys that are being mocked in the 20s that might jump up to 10. Like Khalil Ware is a guy that's being mocked probably floor in the draft, maybe down 19, 20, 21. It wouldn't shock me if the Grizzlies, for some reason, stood there at 9 and Klingon was off the board. If they took Ware. I even had them. I put out a mock that I had them taking Ware at number 9 about a week ago. So I could definitely see that happening because he's a guy that I think is going to rise the more he gets in workouts. Because just look at the production, man. It was there. He was one of the most productive all-around players in college basketball. I mean, even Steph out was knocking down three-pointers. I think he hit 12 on the season. So he's stretching that range out, showing you that he can do that. Didn't have a great combine, but I'm a big fan of his. Been following him ever since high school. And he really improved. His biggest knock on him was his motor. And you see what he did at Oregon, coming back to the improvements he made going to Indiana. It's hard for you to have those kind of improvements when you don't have, if you have a bad motor.
Yeah, I just think a lot of play, if it goes the way ESPN is projected, a lot of teams like from 14 to 30 are going to end up with steals, you know, and it's going to be fun for them. I think the bad teams will be getting the safe players and the good teams will be getting the dynamic players. So it's weird. Normally me and ESPN are pretty aligned, but this year it's been crazy. I mean, normally I'm like 5 or 6 guys they missed on. I have them higher than they do. This year is all over the place. So I just trust my gut, see what I see on tape, and, you know, it usually works for me.
I'm wondering, too, like, I'm wondering how they're going to be able to evaluate because of what you guys are saying and the variance with which people view this draft. You know, I don't know, at least I'm just wondering, like, how do you define a reach, right? Like, if Ware is available at 9 and he's been projected at 20, but, you know, half the people think that that's appropriate and the other half don't, man, I think that's going to be really interesting in terms of just the draft coverage. Because I don't know how you grade these, how all these things turn out. It seems like one of those drafts, man, that everybody can look back on and just be like, you know, how far off the draft coverage actually was from what ended up happening in reality.
You're going to have a really good GM in this draft class that's not going to be as scared to, you know, go with what they see. You know, some GMs are scared if ESPN has them 25th and they're at 10 and that's their guy, they're like, I don't want to get fired. So I'll just take someone closer to their projection. Memphis, your team specifically, do not have to worry about that. Y'all are going to take who you want.
Yes, Lord.
Normally, y'all are spot on. But that year when y'all took Laravia and Roddy, two guys like that going undrafted in the first, I didn't know what was happening with that. But hopefully y'all will be back on track this year.
Yeah, I think the extra first, man, probably what hurt us. That and trade Milton, they needed to hit on that one in order to, it was bold swing. But I think you're right about that. From a Riz perspective, they're not afraid to get their guy. But I do wonder how much of that blowing up in their faces in such grand fashion, to be honest, how much of that will change it? Like, does that change things for them? Does that have them reevaluate their approach? Are they less going to get their guy? And does that play a factor?
It probably will, because they don't want to mess up two drafts like that close together. So it probably will.
Yeah. Isaac, what do you think? Are you more conservative now because that blew up, or do you think they just stick with their policy of whoever they feel it is, get their guy? Okay. Well, anywho.
He didn't want to talk. It was too too heartbreaking for him. He don't want to talk.
No, you know what? Isaac was on the train. He was on the train of from the very beginning. He hated that pick. I leaned more, you know, let's see if that ends up backfiring on him. Then it definitely, that it was a ton of value lost. But if it ends up working out, then ain't nobody gonna talk about it anyway. Man, it didn't work out. So everybody's talking about it. And as they should, man. That Isaac's not heartbroken. He's probably.
Can y'all hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what was going on. I was having some technical difficulties. I could barely hear you guys. I could hear it, but it was faint. I don't know what was going on there. Y'all were touching on that. The Arabia thing, man, that brings back nightmares for me, man, because I was sitting in a hotel. I was out of town. I was in Houston, Texas, man, watching it from the hotel room, man. I was pissed off, and I took a lot of heat that summer, man. People were on me tough. I mean, they thought those were great moves they made, and I knew they were. I mean, LaRavia wasn't even a guy like I didn't, even at the pick that they threw, there was no reason for them to move up. Take two first-round picks to get a Raven. Then you lose Melton. It's just none of those moves made any sense. It was very clear at that point they didn't make any sense. There was no need to wait and see for me, but everybody else, man, thought they had the next Larry Bird with LaRavia. And I was like, it ain't happening, man. He's not going to be that. And I was like, Roddy's not going to be that either. Like, man, oh, you don't know, wait and see, man. GM's smarter than you. I was like, all right, you'll see. And they had to give me my flowers. It took a long time, but they finally admitted, man, that they were wrong on that. But the fan base were high on those moves, man. But I knew they weren't going to pan out.
Yeah. No, I mean, LaRavia wasn't even the best player on his team in college. His teammate went undrafted. So it was very surprising to me.
Yeah.
I didn't get that. I got a
question for y'all. Zaire Williams, we haven't brought him up. You know, he was the ninth pick in the draft a few years ago. He's got the length, athleticism, height. I think he could turn into something. Is it over for him, especially with you guys ninth pick, having Gigi, having Vince Williams? Is it over for him, or is it still a chance?
Yeah, I'm going to let Candace go first on that.
he over on my own, in my book. He's done in my book. I've had enough. I've seen him.
What's he like, 21? Come on, now.
Man,
he's a win-now team. And if the situation matters. If we were not in a win-now situation, then I would probably be more open and more patient to seeing him develop, because injuries have stifled his growth. But man, I think he's always going to be streaky. I think if he improves, I just don't see him not being a streaky guy. He might get a higher floor. Like, he might improve his floor, but at best, man, he's just going to be a hot and cold guy. And I just don't think that's what the Grizzlies need. He doesn't space the floor the way that the Grizzlies need. So he just doesn't fit in to maximize the talent that the team already has. And so since he can do that, he's, in my opinion, you're better off just moving on from him. I really don't care what you do with him. I think
I'm tired of the Jack and how to act, man. It's just he has a few games where, like, oh, man, it looks like he's going to be something, and he turns right back in to the guy he was before. Like, there's no consistency with him. I will say that he plays a lot better with Ja, because when Ja's out there, all he has to do is run the floor, catch lobs. Yeah, who does it? That's right, touche. But that's when he looks the best, man, when he can just run up and down the floor. Like, that's one thing that he can do. He can run in a straight line and catch a lob. That's something that he can do. But that's probably the best that he looks when Ja Morant's out there, and they just haven't had a lot of time with him. I just think now with the emergence of GG and Vince Williams Jr., and you already got the smart thing that I talked about earlier, I just don't know if there's any room for him. I mean, even now with LaRavia, kind of at least showed that he had a heartbeat at the end of last season. I think he's probably even in front of Zaire at this point. So I just don't know if there's any room for him. It wouldn't surprise. I think if they make any kind of trade, he's probably going to end up being filler in that deal if they move somebody.
Yeah, he's probably better off on a more younger developing team.
So yeah, right. Definitely.
I just had to hear the expert's opinion on Zaire.
it wouldn't surprise me if he ended up being a rotation guy somewhere else. It wouldn't. I think he can be a rotation guy probably on a bad team, but he can do that. Anything else? I think if we were going to see it, we would have seen it by now.
Okay. Yeah, man. I was going to say, man, before we wrap up here, man, you still looking to go back into the draft. Who are some of the guys in the second round that you like? Because, again, I talk about the depth of this draft. I call it bottom heavy. The term is usually top heavy. That's kind of how I describe this draft, because you get outside the lottery, man. I think there's definitely rotation players. I mean, I think there's some really safe guys. Tristan Da Silva is a guy that I think probably has one of the safest floors in this draft. I think he's going to be a guy you can plug in right away. Baylor Sharman is another guy that
Can I stop you real quick?
Go ahead.
Is Tristan Da Silva looked at as a second-round guy?
No. He's probably late. I mean, mid to late first. But I was just naming some guys outside of the lottery that I kind of like. But since you have your kind of guys flip-flop, I was just going to go with second round because with you. So that's kind of why I said the second round. But you have kind of an interesting order of your guys. So of the guys that you have in the second round, who are some of the guys that you really like?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been keeping up with consensus rank. So I didn't know if Tristan failed. I was like, oh my God.
No, no, he's about he's about somewhere like 17 yeah. to 25.
My last mock, I have y'all projected to take Tristan Da Silva, you know, because everyone would be expecting a center, and I could see Memphis, you know, blindsiding everyone, just going with the talent. But as far as my second round guys, you know, I have, it's a guy from Kentucky, Antonio Reeves, lights out.
Yeah, really shoot it.
Yeah. Quentin Post, that's a guy nobody's talking
about. Yeah, I know Quentin Post. Yeah,
center from Boston College.
Boston College.
Yeah, for me, I've seen him in the 60s. He's my 34th ranked player.
The Greek Grizzlies actually worked him out. He went in for a workout for the Grizzlies.
Yeah, I think that'll be a sneaky pick for somebody, whoever picks him up. Yeah, you mentioned Baylor Shireman should be a role player. Jalen Wells, role player. Pele Larson, keep
an eye. Man, I love it.
Yeah,
love it.
Really talented young man. Cam Christie, he might be able to do something.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of guys that I have a lot of faith in. Adem Bona, I have him in the late first. I've seen him in the 60s, 50s, 40s.
Yeah, he's all over the place. I've seen him in some late first on some mocks too, and I've also seen him at the bottom, like you said. So he's all over the place. He's a guy I like, undersized center. I think if he was three inches taller, he'd be a lock for the first round, no question. I think that's the only thing that kind of holds him back. But I like him. Anytime a guy can still get it done at that height playing center, I mean, you gotta like that.
And I think this draft will be good for you guys. So even if you don't take a center in the first, there will be a plethora of centers you could take in the second, even though they will not fit Candace's liking because they're going to be young and inexperienced.
Yeah. Over Shumte is another guy that I like. He's super raw, so he definitely doesn't fit Candace's mold. He's a guy that, like they said about Bruno Caboclo, famously years ago, 2 years away from being 2 years away, that's probably Uwe Chumchi. But if you're a Sar fan, like say he starred 3 years ago, that's probably he's shown potential, man, that he can stretch it out to three. I mean, he could be an elite defensive guy. I love him, but you just got to throw him down in South Haven and forget you even have him. Don't even think about him for 2 years. That's the kind of guy he is, but he has super potential. Like I think ceiling wise, he could be one of the highest guys in this draft. He's out of NBA Africa. People that aren't familiar, Uwe Chumchi is his name again, man. Go check him out. He's super raw, but young. I think probably the youngest prospect in this draft, but he has a lot of potential, man. You see all the tools, ball of clay. You can mold it. It's just going to take a while to get him there, but the potential is off the charts.
Yeah, you guys have the 58th pick, so you could just use that on him.
Yeah.
Send him away. Yeah. Another point guard is Ken Simpson, KJ Simpson.
Love him. Love him.
Be nice for y'all at 39, too. So it's going to be a lot of options out there.
So, yeah, KJ Simpson, man, super, I think, 39-inch vertical. But one of the higher verticals at the combine, man, he tested really well athletically. And people were sleeping on him. Like, he should have been a first-round pick all the time. Like, I remember a couple months ago, they had him down in the 50s. I'm like, man, did you watch this guy play? He's one of the most productive players in college basketball and getting it done in the tournament. That's
why. 20 points per game.
Yeah, I'm like, man, what are y'all watching? Like, why is this guy going in the 50s? And he finally got up there. I think his combine helped him get up. Now you're seeing him kind of in a late first, early second. But he's a guy that I really like out of Colorado. So, yeah, man, there's a lot of talent in this draft. I mean, again, I could name about 20 guys post-lottery that I really, really like and that I think could be rotation players that are safe rotation players. Like, I don't have any question. Like, you even talk about, like, we talk about Pele Larson. They have him going, like, I think, take it to, like, 57 or something.
Oh, my God.
And I don't get that at all because you look at guys like Christian Braun and Brandon Podzimski, he could be that. Like, and you go get a guy like that at 57? Like, it's crazy, man. Yeah,
I got him at 37, so that's crazy.
Yeah, I think he's really talented, man. Can shoot it, strong, more athletic than you think. I've been pushing him a lot for months. That he's a guy that I really like, man. So it's gonna be interesting, man. Coming up soon, man. Coming up on us, man. I do want to ask you, man. What do you think about the 2-day thing? Like, I already thought it was a bad idea. I think the NFL does it, but the NFL. The second, third, fourth, fifth round is still high interest in the NFL because there's so many players on the team. But I felt like splitting it up to 2 days was already a bad idea for the NBA because most people like us that are really locked in, we're going to be interested in second round media people. But the casual fan is not going to be locked in on the second round. But when you have it on the same night, you just going to have people, the stragglers that had it on in the first round, and they're just going to have it on TV sitting around still on. But now you move to the second, you're going to lose all those people. And not only is it on 2 days, the second round is in the daytime. It's at 3 p.m. Central Time. There's going to be 1 p.m. on the West Coast, 4 p.m. Eastern. Like, a lot of people are going to be at work and everything, man. That's weird, man. I think it's on the day of the first presidential debate is why they're not having it at night. But I don't like that at all. I got a feeling they're going to end up going back to the one-day format, man. What do you think about that?
I actually like the two-day format. The daytime effect on the second day is weird. That kind of cancels the point of it this year. They should have just moved the first day to a different day if that was the issue.
Yeah, that's what they should have done for sure.
Yeah, if it was at the same, you know, prime time, I think people would tune in, because the first day, it's a lot of intrigue about it, a lot of talk about it. The next day, you want to hear all the podcasts talking about the picks and stuff. And then going into that next day, you're going to hear about the players that fail, that should have been taken in the first, that, you know, I want to see where they're going to go in the second now. So
I think that's how we feel. Like, I think,
maybe.
broader scope, because I've talked to several people. People say, I ain't watching that. Like, I've had lots of people tell me, man, I ain't thinking about watching it on the second day. So they say, no matter what's the night or daytime, they're not watching it. So,
yeah. Well, it just depends. We'll, a lot of those same fans will say, I'm not watching second round, period. So, you know, you're not really going to know until you do it for a few years. And if it doesn't work out, go back to one day. But sometimes the second round seems a little jumbled up and rushed and all over the place. I think this will give everyone a chance to reset. I think more trades will happen because teams will have a night to think about it. So I think it's not going to hurt nothing, you know. It'll be all right.
It's going to be interesting, though, to be watching a draft in the daytime. Like, that's weird, watching NBA draft in the daytime.
But look, most people get their news from Twitter, X anyway, about the draft. So, you know.
Yeah, you got any thoughts on that, Candace?
Initially, I liked the idea because last year was – extremely long. I mean,
I don't know why. Yeah, last year it felt like it really drug out. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, they really drug that thing out. So I understood the logic between breaking it up and trying to see if, you know, if you can really, you know, do. I think the quality of the show fell off overall just because it was drowning out so much. I understood, but man, I agree. Like, that prime, like, you need to have it prime time. I don't even think it's fair to evaluate the decision. Because it's like comparing apples and oranges, pretty much. Like, that's, you got to have two primetime slots in order to be able to fairly judge what people legitimately watch that. People aren't going to watch it in the middle of the day unless they are, like you said, media coverage. People are, like, super interested in the draft. So it's going to look bad in terms of the numbers. Regardless, the question is, do they let that deter them off 1 year, or do they decide to try it again and actually give it two primetime slots? And I don't think we can really judge it until they do that. I get your point, but, you know, the casual fan, they have to do something, I think, in terms of making it appealing. I don't know if you got to have, you know, star basketball players interviewed or something. You got to do something to bring appeal to the casual fan. They can figure out how to pull it off, which I don't think will be this year. We'll see if they keep it up or not. But I think it has promise, but the execution is, I mean, they're going to have to tweak that for sure.
Yeah.
So you have a guy like Donovan Klingon fall to the second round. You never know.
I don't think that's gonna happen, but
no,
man, we'll see. Yeah, we'll see. But I think, again, man, as I said at the top of the show, I think the Grizzlies, I expect them to be active. I think just with the way things went last year, with the Ja suspension, him getting hurt, crazy amount of injuries they have. I think you look around the West, it's an arms race, man. I mean, these teams. You look at going into the playoffs, I didn't think Minnesota was what they were. Already had Oklahoma City. They're coming. Then they're at any moment poised to make a big move. I mean, they have more assets than probably any team has ever had. So they're going to do something big at some point. Denver's still there. Dallas made it to the NBA Finals. Who's kind of saw that happening? I mean, so the West is tough. I mean, they're going to have to make some moves, man, to kind of make this team better. And I think they feel that pressure. So I expect them to make a move. Their names come up a lot as far as trading up, trading down, trading out. Jared Allen is a name that's come up. So I expect them to do something. Klingon is a guy that they have said they have a lot of interest in. They've even talked about they might move up to three. I don't necessarily think you have to move up to three to get Klingon. I look at the board. If he gets past Washington at two, in Houston or who or somebody else that they trade their pick to at three, I think he drops to at least six. I think if you could move up to six with Charlotte, that's kind of the sweet spot. I think if you can move up to six with Charlotte, I think you can get him as a thought that he won't fall below seven with Portland. If you could jump in front of them, I think you can get Klingon at six. I don't think San Antonio, I don't think it's going to take him at four, and I don't see Detroit taking him at five. So if he falls below 2-3, I think he makes it to six. I think you can get up there to get him. Three is a kind of a big move. I don't know, much as I like him, I don't know if I would give up the assets to move up six spots to try to get him in this draft. I'm not sure what Houston would be looking for, but I think that's going to be more than I'd be willing to give up, even though I like him. There are other prospects that I like enough to where I'm not going to probably make that move. So we'll see.
But Klingon is your guy. That's who you want. We really
that's the guy at the top of my board outside of Sarr. I just, even though I'm not as a big of a believer in Sarr, I feel like, I mean, he's to me, I think, the highest ceiling guy in the draft. So I think if you have the opportunity to get him, you take him. I don't necessarily think he's the best fit for me next to Jaren. I think him and Jaren are kind of similar. Some of the things that people say about Jaren that they complain about, I think Sarr could end up displaying some of those same things that people complain about Jaren about. I think they're really a lot alike. So I don't know if he's the best fit. I think Memphis needs more of a true center. And I think Sarr is more of a 4-5 than a true five. So we'll see, man. But again, man, I think this is a great draft. I think this draft is getting a bad rap. There's not the superstar talent at the top, but there's a lot of depth. I mean, we named some guys there. We're talking about Perrell Larson, guy they're talking about going to the bottom of the draft. And I think he's a rotation guy day one. There's no question in my mind with some of the things that he brings to the table. But, man, I definitely want to send a shout-out to William, man, for joining us here. All Rookie Podcast on the Ethos Network, man. Tell them a little bit about your podcast.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of draft podcasts I used to listen to. They would mainly just talk about the top 10 guys. So I was like, I can come in and fill a lane for the guys that are not getting talked about as much and give different perspective. I see a lot of people following consensus as well. So as you can see, I'm not doing it on purpose to try to, you know, just reach and find stuff. I'm just evaluating just what I see, and it happens.
Man, you do it year round too, right?
Yeah. I try to follow the rookies all season because once the draft is over, we always are looking at these guys. But then when the draft is over, we forget about, all of them except for the top 10. But the other guys are still playing roles and being a factor in the NBA. So it's fun to keep up with the rookies all year long. So follow me at the All Rookie Podcast on Apple and all that good stuff on Twitter at William Is Bill. Thank y'all so much for having me on.
Yeah, man, I want to say shout out to our guy David Williams. He's with you. He's a big Cody Williams fan. Like I'm not with you. Me and him have debated over and over about Cody Williams. So he's a big fan of him, man. So y'all on the same page with Cody Williams.
I don't like being on the same page as David, but it's all right.
Same here, man. I love the debate, man. Me and him are always going back and forth, man, on different things. All I ever do, we agree on anything. So, but it's all that fun, man.
Oh yeah. Thank you too, Candace.
All right, yeah, it was great to have you. Will, good talking with you. You definitely bring some fresh takes, which I think
for sure.
I think we're gonna also appreciate. Like I said, I'm not super big draft expert, but it can get repetitive. So it was very interesting to hear just your takes and how you view this draft and so differently from everybody else. So, man, everybody, make sure you go check out Will. He's doing great work over there. Sports Ethos, make sure to support the podcast, fellow brethren. Anyway, hit him up. You can find me on Twitter at CandaceH901. And I let Isaac take us home.
Yeah, man. Make sure you go over to at Ethos Grizzlies. Give us a like and a follow. We definitely appreciate that, man. Definitely got some more draft content coming for you. I got John Chepkevich, Director of Scouting for Draft Express. He's going to be joining us in the next week or so. So make sure you be on the lookout for that. All that info will be out on Twitter or the X app. I'm still going to call it Twitter, man. I try to call it X. Just doesn't sound right to me. So I'm just going to
Twitter.com if you look online, man.
But my guy, John Chepkevich, man, I always love. We've had him on the program before in the past, but he's now with Draft Express. He's going to jump on, talk some more drafts. So looking forward to that. But you can find me on the Twitter at Isaac_NBA. That's ISAAC_NBA. And until next time. Thanks again to William for joining us, man. Make sure you go out, check out his podcast, the All Rookies Podcast on the Ethos Grizzlies Network. And until next time, we're gone.
Peace.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, It's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.